This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Last hour, best hour, Sharp Money Wednesday, Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, and joining us now via the Progressive Guest Line, this gentleman and myself were just reminiscing on some old days that I had down there in the Atlantic City area. He is Scott Grayson of 97.3 ESPN, the Eagles reporter, also works in Philly for Fox 29. Follow him on X at @SGraysonFox29. Scott, we won't go too much about, reminiscing on the Tilton Inn and all the beautiful trimmings that we used to eat down there in the South Jersey area. Let's focus eyes on the prize here because the Philadelphia Eagles, I saw them reporting for camp. Everyone's all excited. I saw Jalen Hurts running out. Everyone was cheering and yelling. Expectations are high in Philly this year. What's the vibe for you heading into camp for this Eagles team?
Yeah, they are high, and I think they should be. I mean, when you look at what they have on this offense and this roster in general, but particularly on offense, with Kellen Moore, and that's the key, calling the shots. And look, his arrival was put right in front of our faces today because everything they were doing had a lot of motion to it. So they were already doing some different things than they had before. Of course, Saquon Barkley here now. So the expectations are high. And look, you know, one of the things I think when you look at differences between last year and this year, you know, last year they're coming off the Super Bowl appearance and Jalen Hurts got his new deal and he was getting a lot of publicity. We didn't hear a lot about Jalen Hurts in the offseason. The guy came in today. He was very crisp today at practice, hitting guys in stride when he was throwing the ball. And I know, look, there's no pads. It's day one. But there's definitely a lot of reasons to be optimistic when looking at this Eagles team this year.
Scott, tell me if I'm being fair or out of line here. When I looked at the Eagles a year ago, it wasn't about a player. It wasn't about a coordinator. To me, their biggest issue was they were immature because Nick Sirianni has these moments of immaturity, and that's why things kind of devolved down the stretch. Does it feel like that's fair, and do you think that could have been addressed with the additions they made at with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio coming in at the coordinator spots?
Yeah, I think that is somewhat fair because obviously what happened was, they started 10-1, but there were issues going on behind the scenes. And you could argue that perhaps there was some immaturity and unable to handle the tough situations that arose that ultimately fractured and led monumental collapse for this team. I mean, look, as we sit here, you know, we were wondering at the end of the year, was Nick Sirianni even going to keep his job? And what they did was looks like they brought some adults, put them in the room. And they told Nick, we want you to grow up a little bit and to just handle the CEO of this team. And he's embraced that role to his credit. And I think what we saw and heard today from him and Jalen Hurts was that they are ready to move forward and they don't want to talk anymore about this stuff. And they did the right things, said the right things today. And I think what your viewpoint, I thought your perspective was pretty much spot on, and it's going to be interesting to see. And we won't know until the heat really gets turned up, right? Once the games start coming, the live bullets are flying. How Sirianni, how Hurts, how the rest of the team, really. I mean, we also went through a time where A.J. Brown didn't speak to the media last year. Everybody's going to be looking to Nick and taking their cues from him, and I think there is a level of growing up that needed to take place from the antics that he was doing. And look, some of the fans in Philly, when everybody's winning, they kind of liked some of that trash talking and the flashiness. But as they started to lose, there was no room for that. And I think that they've now reached the point, and Nick's reached the point where you've been in the league now a few years as a head coach. It's time to start acting like one.
Yeah, and I think that's the good news is if the biggest flaw, if the fly in the ointment, Scott, is maturity, well, that's usually something that's coachable, that's teachable. And I know it's the coach in this case that is the one that's a little bit immature. But when you bring in other really smart coaches around you, and sometimes the best head coaches, it's not because they're the ones that are the smartest. It's because they surround themselves with the smartest people. And I do think the room got a lot brighter when you bring in Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore. I think Fangio, especially coming from Miami, I mean, that was such a terrible fit. I think his culture, his vibe fits much better in Philly. And that's kind of the next step of this equation, Scott. Is Vic Fangio's defense, based on the Eagles had a ton of problems last year, moving people all around, the end of the season was a disaster. Is that the right guy? Is that the right fit? Because he's a pretty hard-nosed individual. You go watch some of that, the exit interviews down there in Miami. They were not kind to Vic Fangio. Yeah. What is the vibe in Philly now as we get a new culture with this defense?
Yeah, that's going to take a little time to really start seeing how it rubs off from the players. But I think it's good. What these guys went through last year, and you saw it on the field, I'm talking about the players, there was so much confusion, so much lack of communication. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like they were playing in a haze, and they didn't really truly know where the other guys were going to be on the field. And I think that came from changing coordinators in the middle of the or play callers on defense in the middle of the season. It just all led to, it was just bad. I mean, if they had to do it over again, they would do it differently. So you bring in a stable force, a guy who's got a lot of experience here, an adult, as we talked about it, that you want to bring in, hard-nosed old football player who's going to do things as he knows the right way. I think this team needed that. I think that defense needed that. There's a lot of young players on that defense who really need to be brought up into the NFL. And look, they don't really know much better or much differently at this point. So it's a younger defense that needs some of that I think that older school mentality. And I think it's going to be good for them. And kind of going back to Nick, when you brought some of these older guys, established coaches in here, especially a Vic Fangio, look, you only have to go back a few years to see what they put around Doug Peterson when they won a Super Bowl. It was Jim Schwartz on defense. And they used his experience as a head coach and his years in the league to really help counter and balance and be a resource for Doug Peterson to use. I think this is going to be something similar for Nick Sirianni, and I think it was a good move by the Eagles.
And Fangio has some new pieces to play with because, let's be real, James Bradberry was getting picked on worse than me at the lunch table in middle school. Scott, like Bradberry was the target for everyone. They upgrade the secondary. Gardner Johnson comes in. They draft Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. Obviously, Bryce Huff off the edge now. I swap him with Reddick. He's younger, more upside. Devin White, a really under-the-radar move. It does feel like the defense has the players to take that next step. Don't you feel that way?
It looks like they should. It's up to these guys to do it. The growth, like the Jalen Carter, he really needs to have a good year. Jordan Davis needs to have a good year. I'll tell you one guy who popped out with the eye test, right? Nolan Smith, when we see him come in and report to camp, dude, that dude was working this offseason, and you can see him. He was a first-round pick last year. Didn't get a whole lot of reps last year. Was hungry this offseason, it looks like, and really put the work in. Now we'll have to see how that translates on the field. You mentioned Bradberry. Bradberry today, first of all, I'm surprised the guy is still with the team, but he's here, and he was working with the second-team safeties today.
Oh, wow.
You talk about where is this guy fallen. That's where he's at right now. These good young players, and we're excited to see what Cooper DeJean might be able to do, but he's going to miss the first, it looks like, 3 weeks of practice with a hamstring injury he suffered while training and getting ready for this season. It won't affect him for the regular season, but obviously these are valuable reps the young guy needs to get. But they do have a lot of pieces here. They drafted heavily on the defense, and I think as we going back to what you were saying, it's going to be on these players to really take the next step now. They really need to build on the experience that a lot of them have. And under Vic Fangio, take those steps with his tutelage. And I think the tools are here. But again, as is the way in Philadelphia, still, you know, skeptical about linebacker. What do they really have there? We just don't know yet.
Scott Grayson, 97.3 ESPN Radio, Eagles reporter, also Fox Philly sports anchor. Follow him on X at S. Grayson Fox 29. Well, I tell you what, they're bringing in Devin White, Bryce Huff. We mentioned Gardner Johnson, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, of course, who I did see is dealing with a bit of an injury. But there is a lot of positives coming back for this defense. I think if you had to close your eyes, Scott, and kind of foresee the end of the season, do you think the Eagles' offense is the better unit, or is the defense right now maybe a step ahead?
The way I look at it this season, where I'm sitting right now on day one of training camp, I look at this offense as being what will lead the way. And I think when you look at this defense, it's like, man, we don't need you to pitch any shutouts, guys. We don't even need you to hold them to less than 10. I just need you to hold them to about 20 or less, and this offense should be able to score. With Kellen Moore, his creativity, the weapons these guys have, of course, the great qualifier for every team is staying healthy. And if they can do that, you know, with Dallas Goedert at tight end, Saquon Barkley moving all over the field at running back, and then A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, what amounts to was really two number ones at receiver. Jalen Hurts was running around again, and his legs are all healthy again. I mean, this should lead the way. It really should be one of the top offenses in the league. So you just need this defense to not break apart and shatter. If they can hold opponents I think the 20 points or less, I think this team's going to win a lot of games.
And Scott, what are you hearing about Saquon Barkley and how he's acclimated to the team, to the offense, how that you expect them to use him? What have been the early conversations about his arrival in Philly?
Well, it's what everybody wants to see versus what you think or what you can count on the Eagles to actually do. One of the things with the Eagles that I, you know, you want to see Saquon Barkley get the ball a lot. The guy's an electric player behind this line, which is better than New York's was, with this quarterback and these offensive weapons. When teams decide they're not going to take away Saquon and try to take away other pieces, you want to let Saquon, you know, you want to feed the beast. And I think there are fans here in Philly who wonder, will the Eagles try to have Saquon touches to a certain extent so that he's available at the end of the year and not getting too banged up during the course of this 17-game season? That is one of the concerns I know some fans have. Me, I'm looking for Saquon to get, 15 to 20 touches. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility per week. Now, will it be lower some weeks and higher in others? Yeah, possibly. But I think it's probably, you know, knowing the way the Eagles are, with, they only have one football to get to all these guys, it might end on being closer to 15 touches. But how are those touches? I mean, he's going to be out of the backfield. He was motioning around a lot today, from all the reports we heard down at camp, too, that Kellen Moore is going to be incorporating a lot of motion. This team was so predictable last year offensively because they weren't motioning. They were easy to diagnose. That I think they're going to find every way they can to get Saquon out in open field behind this line at times and just let him do what he can do. That's what he was brought here for. And I think if he doesn't get to do that.
Good stuff, Scott. We got to cut you off. Appreciate the time. Scott Grayson, more Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, check it out. VSIN's got a football special. You know why? Because the betting guides are out now. NFL right now. College football drops on August 1st. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get access. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl. What a deal. $175. That discount ends July 31st. Check it out. VSIN.com/subscribe. Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today on Sharp Money. Dustin Sweetelson here as well. Time to switch gears and go back to the diamond. We have three up, three down. We have baseball picks and prognostications to discuss, including a 100-1 Cy Young bet made today by the big fella. But first, Michael Wacha, who he had a couple of breaths of Cy Young air at one point. He is not going to win that award this year, but over the last month, he's pitching as well as anyone in baseball. 23 1/3 innings pitched, sub-2 ERA, 24 strikeouts. And let's be honest, Waka's not a high strikeout guy, so for him to get one strikeout per inning is really impressive. Whip around 1-2 quality starts. So Waka tonight gets the D-backs. Royals D-backs tonight. Big win for Arizona last night after getting smoked in game one. I don't know if they play another game tomorrow, so let's just call it a rubber match kind of feel tonight between these interleague rivals. What say you on Michael Wacha?
Well, I'm not betting this specifically, but I think it's worth noting because Michael Wacha throughout his career has been a streaky pitcher. He does go on runs where he can pitch in that upper level. He doesn't have overly dominant stuff where the strikeout numbers are going to be incredible, but he is capable every now and then of going on a heater, and he's currently in the midst of that, taking on an Arizona team that is much better against lefties than they are against righties. This, to me, if you were leaning towards the Royals, I think it would be worth playing because I think Wacha is on one of those hot streaks.
Wacha Flacha, back him on the streak. Dodgers against lefties also on our three up board today. How about this? Batting .268 against lefties here. They're probably betting just as well against righties. They're just such a good offensive team. But their OPS in their home runs this season against southpaws, number one in all of baseball. Here's the problem with tonight. They are facing a lefty, but not all lefties are created equal, right? Just like, I don't know what the other line is in some other thing. Not all whatever insert here are created equal. Robbie Ray is a different kind of lefty, but so he is a plus strikeout lefty, gives up a lot of home runs, but we don't know what we're going to get. He hasn't started in over a year. So this is a really tough handicap today.
Over a year. We haven't seen him since March 31st. 2023, it was the only start he made last year, his first start of the year, knocked out for the season. So he essentially really hasn't pitched in a real game, one real game over the last 2 years.
It's crazy.
Just brutal for him. And his opening appearance is going to come against the Dodgers, who just are killing lefties this year. I am on the Dodgers team total.
Okay.
Over 4.5. I got even money on it. And look, from a strategy standpoint, most people know this. If you don't, if you're new to betting, you prefer to back a team total on a road team because you're guaranteed to get that ninth at bat. I will throw that out the window when I'm going to do it when I'm backing a Dodgers offense that is borderline historical.
Yeah, I think you make exceptions to every rule. Paul Skeens is an exception to the rule. His Cy Young number came down last night going into the ninth inning. I remember we were saying, oh, he's not going to pitch enough innings. He's like, oh, I'll show you. I'll just pitch into the ninth. Wheeler was good last night, too, but that's besides the point. Exception to the rule, I think the Robbie Ray stuff tonight's really tough to handicap. We talked about this earlier in the show. When you have a pitcher that hasn't pitched in a while, you're at a disadvantage. You haven't seen him. The sports books are too. So the disadvantage is on both sides. Unless you get a definitive number on how long he's going to pitch tonight, my guess is we see a lot of that Giants bullpen, which also hasn't been that good this year. Interesting stuff. On the other side, too, speaking of uncertainty, Tyler Glasnow's pitching tonight. He's also coming off of an injury. He hasn't pitched in almost 3 weeks. So that's a tough handicap, I think, tonight, Dodgers-Giants. I'm staying off that game. Hunter Green is also on the three-up list. And here we go, big fella. I'll give you the floor. 100-1 on Hunter Green to win Cy Young. Tell me why.
I think there's a clear path here. I don't know what we're doing. Over the last month, first of all, he's a young guy who's always had elite stuff, overpowering stuff, susceptible to the long ball, allowing runs there. But it does feel like he could be putting it together. Over the last month, 28 and two-thirds innings pitched, a 2.51 ERA, 35 punch-outs, three quality starts along the way. You dive deeper into this. This is a guy who is sixth in the National League in strikeouts. He is eighth in the National League in ERA. But here's the key. He's first among National League starting pitchers in WAR, 4.1. Tied behind him for second, Skeens, Wheeler, and Lopez from the Braves at 3.4. That is a big drop off there. You figure if we're going to project out here and we're playing the upside here, it's a long shot for a reason. He's 100-1 for a reason. But Hunter Green with 10, maybe 11 starts back, averaging 6.65 Ks per start this year, he should be around 200 strikeouts for the inning, for the year. His ERA has continued to drop. We're down to 3.14. We can get under 3. We can get in the mid twos here. If he continues to be dominant, we have an outside shot at 100-1 here. Obviously, it's not likely. It's why the number's priced that way. Our goal is here to catch lightning in a bottle and run it down the home stretch in the Cy Young race.
Yeah, I think if your goal making this bet is to win the bet, I think it's priced fairly. If your goal making this bet is to make another bet down the road that could come off of it because you have one or two other guys that are still in the race, that makes sense. I don't see win equity in Hunter Green. That's the problem. I don't think he can win this award. He can reel off another great month and get to the second or third spot on the odds board if there's some drop off. But I don't think he's going to win this award.
No, but it could help me get creative in the market. That's part
of the goal. You're betting 100-1. You have to know what you're signing up for.
Look, I'll take
a
small
flyer. But it's a great handicap. It's a good handicap. You're right. The wins above replacement's really good.
I was shocked he was first in WAR. I was not expecting that when I started looking at the numbers. And he's a guy we've all been tantalized before. And part of it is my pre-flop analysis of Hunter Green before the season started was, I'd like him 35-40-1 to win Cy Young. Well, it's late in the year. He's coming into his own a bit. He's going to get better as a young pitcher. I'll take the shot at 100-1.
Also, there is a vibe to me that says the Reds are a playoff team. I don't know if it's going to work out that way. We talked about this, too, a few weeks ago. We're like Reds to win the division.
I have 7-1.
I have been so wrong about the Brewers for like 3 years now. I'm finally waving the white flag. I am done wasting money with the National League Central. I think the Cardinals are a really good team. They're, for some reason, they have a better roster, but they can't catch. This Brewers team's got alligator blood, man. They just win every close game.
I need you to explain this to me. They lost Corbin Burns to the Orioles, right?
Woodruff.
They lose Woodruff for the year. Wade Miley for the year. Devin Williams, has he pitched yet?
He's about to, but not yet.
And then right
100
now,
games in.
And right now, Christian Yelich is hurt.
And they won again today. Another close game where it was tied in the ninth. They were down in the sixth. They came back, tied it, won it in the ninth. This Brewers team, it's like Teddy KGB and Rounders. They got alligator blood. You check, 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 check. You trap me. I don't know what it is about this Brewers team. I was wrong about them last year. I'm wrong about them this year. Don't ask me for advice on the NL Central. I can't give it to you straight because I can't get this Brewers team right. Every logical bone in my body says the Brewers should be 10 games under 500, not 15 over.
Well, what I tell you is I'm annoyed because they were my favorite World Series play a year ago at 40-1, and now they're the team that I wanted them to be a year ago with less players. And, oh, by the way, they lost Craig Counsell. Oh, by the way, Pat Murphy taking over as the manager of this team. Haven't skipped a beat. I know people think he's going to win manager of the year, but doesn't him winning after replacing Counsell prove that the manager is irrelevant in Milwaukee,
agree.
That it's all the front office?
Well, so I did a little bit more of a deep dive earlier this week on them because I'm just like, what did I miss? What am I missing with this Brewers team? Here's the one thing they do that is elite, and they do it in volume. They are a elite base running team. They steal the most bases, and they attempt the most steals, and they put constant pressure on the pitcher. And even if they either, A, don't steal a base, it's in the pitcher's mind that they're going to go because these pitchers, before the start, they talk to their coaches and their pitching coaches, their bullpen coaches, and they get their scouting reports, and they go over everything. Hey, when this guy's on base, green light to go. When this guy's on base, he's going to steal. When this guy's on base, he's going to steal. All of a sudden, the pitcher goes through 1 through 9 in the order, and every single guy is a threat to steal, and they steal the most bases out of anyone. It gets inside the pitcher's head, and it starts to create. This offense doesn't have a lot of hitting talent, but if you're constantly screwing with the mind of the pitcher when you're on first base, now you can't steal first base, that's the age-old cliche, but once you're on first base, they create pressure, and pressure bursts pipes, and I think that's why the Brewers just way over their skis this year offensively. It's the base running, which is a very overlooked category. Maybe not so much in this new generation of baseball with the new base, you know, the new rules and the you know, bigger bases. But in general, that is the one thing this Brewers team does that's elite. And I'm not saying that's the reason why they're 15 over and running away with the division, but it certainly ain't hurting because, man, I cannot get this Brewers team right. All right, on the other side, we are going to talk to Jay Croucher of NBC Sports. He is the lead betting analyst. Very excited to catch up with him. More football on the other side. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, go to VSiN.com right now. Why? Well, we've got plenty of picks for tonight. Josh Applebaum betting splits for this Wednesday across the baseball universe. Steve Mackinnon's got power ratings, trends, all kinds of fun stuff. And like I mentioned, I'm watching it right now. I'm watching, I think it's Uzbekistan and Spain battling Olympic soccer. Well, Nigel Seeley's got some Olympic soccer picks and predictions for this upcoming tournament. All right, welcome back to Sharp Money. Very excited to go back out to the Progressive guest line right now and talk to this gentleman, Jay Croucher, lead betting analyst over at NBC Sports. Follow him on X at CroucherJD. And Jay, we were kind of talking about this during the break. I gave Dustin some crap about this bet a couple days ago. He gave me Francisco Lindor, 60-1 to win NL MVP. And I was like, you're crazy. There's no way that anyone but Otani or maybe Betts or Freeman, really, not Betts, is going to win this award this year. But hey, if Dustin's on it and if you're on it, maybe I need to change my tune. So tell me why Lindor's live in the MVP market.
Yeah, I think that everyone has anointed Otani, and he's certainly the guy that's most likely to win. But the thing is, even when there's a clear favorite, the rest of the book still has to go somewhere. And right now, books are saying that Otani is like an 80% chance to win MVP. I'd have it a little bit lower than that, but that type of range. So the other 20-25% has to go somewhere. I think Bryce Harper is the second most likely guy to win. But I think Lindor should be third, just because if you're going to beat Otani, you have to do it in a different way. And I think Lindor is a really good comparison to Otani, and that, you know, Otani's weakness is he's a DH. So he obviously doesn't play defense. Lindor is arguably the best defensive player in the National League. He is by Fangraphs in terms of how they rate defense. And so you have a guy in Lindor who plays in New York City, which is always good in these awards of the New York media bias. He's on track to be 30 home runs, 30 steals, 7.5 to 8 war, potentially leading the league there on a Mets team with all the grimace stuff that has become one of the best stories in the league. So I think between war, between home runs and steals, and between Lindor's narrative that, look, I don't think that he is like neck and neck with Otani or anything, but I think he should be the third favorite for MVP, which is in the 60-1 range, makes him appetizing as a flyer.
Mm. Oh, I love it. We are so on the same page. But Jay, you've been behind the book. You've been booking action like this before. Now you're placing the bets. And here's my frustration when I'm betting into these markets, because they're voted on by the writers and all these people, media members who vote for these awards, is the narrative that it's a best player award. If it's a best player award, why isn't it most outstanding player or best player? Why is it most valuable player? And we want to add in what Lindor's doing as a leader for the Mets when they were in tumultuous times, looking like they were going to be sellers. And you can correlate the Mets, not just with Grimace throwing out the first pitch, but Francisco Lindor getting hot, especially from the left side of the plate facing righties, as a reason why the Mets have catapulted themselves into the playoff picture. So as a bookmaker, can you kind of help us understand how you place a number on this when you know, despite it being most valuable player in all sports, it's likely going to the best player?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Look, all these awards have very silly elements to them, which I think largely people don't like. I like it because I think it creates inefficiencies and ways to bet into these markets to take advantage of it. With Lindor specifically, I think the way you have to think about it, where if it's a close race between him and Otani, everyone's going to want to vote for Lindor because Otani wins MVP every single year. He's a DH. Lindor is going to have a lot more narrative. And I think that it's all about kind of pricing out how close does Lindor need to get to Otani's offensive stats? Because Lindor's not going to get to Otani's OPS and his homer numbers. It's just how close does he have to get? I think if Lindor can get his OPS up to like 870, 880, Otani falls closer to, you know, 995, a touch over 1.00. I think that Lindor, if he gets past him in war, if the Mets surge into the playoffs, I think at that point that he can actually win MVP.
It is an interesting discussion around Otani because he's DHing this year. He's not, he's not playing the field. He's basically half of what he really is as a player. And how much do the voters knock him for that? I'm curious. It is going to be an interesting vote to see if he really does run away with the market, even though that's what the market's telling you right now. See if he runaways with the votes as we get to the end of the rainbow. And the MVP stuff in the NFL, like, it's pretty easy, Jay. Just pick the team that's going to have the best record, right? Pick that quarterback, and you're probably going to have the MVP that year. Baseball, a little more nuanced, right? Mike Trout's won it a bunch of times. The Angels were never really a good team. So it's always interesting to track the votes. Let's go to the NFL now, because I always like when you tell me if you're higher or lower on a team relative to market. I think the Bills right now are a team that maybe overall the sentiment is down, but maybe that opens up an opportunity where the market's not really fully representing how good Buffalo can be this year.
Yeah, I think the narrative around the Bills is that they have taken a bit of a step back because they lost all these big names. But these guys that they lost, I think they were big mainly in name as opposed to overall impact last season. Stephon Diggs is obviously the biggest one. Stephon Diggs wasn't good the second half of the season. He fell off a cliff. Guys that they lost, like Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White got injured like 3 weeks into the season last year. He didn't give them much. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, these guys are on the downslope of their careers. I think that when you look at the Bills, last year, everything went wrong for them outside of Allen staying healthy. They had a ton of injuries. Their defense was decimated. Diggs fell off. And they were still the 2 seed. And if Sherfield or Diggs could catch one of those Josh Allen bombs in the divisional round against Kansas City, then they would have been in the AFC title game. So I think with the Bills, that people have maybe lost sight of the fact that this year they're likely going to be healthier on defense. And they still have Josh Allen at quarterback, who I think is the second best quarterback in the league. So I bet a bit of the Bills at 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. I think there's still some 16-1, 18-1 out there. Like right now, their Super Bowl odds are almost double Baltimore's. Like I just can't get there. I think that the Bills, they're still, like, the Chiefs should be the favorite in the AFC, but I think the Bills are right there in that next lot of teams.
That's always funny, Jay, too, because, like, when it comes to futures, we have so much time to think, and, like, I'm kind of down on the Bills, but now that you kind of lay out your point, I'm thinking, well, how do we handle the Bills during the regular season? Is the head coach good? Does he win a lot? Check. Is the quarterback healthy? Is he there? Does he win a lot? Check. That's all the information we generally need to decide if a team is good, despite them losing a lot of pieces. Those two guys, the head coach McDermott and Josh Allen, can figure it out. Now let's go to the other end. A team that you may be lower on that I know everyone loves. They had the number one pick. They even had another pick in the top 10 and added a receiver. Why are you a little bit lower on the Bears than the rest of the market right now?
So I think the easiest way to fade a team is to just look at, look, you would rather a team be better on offense than on defense in terms of stability year to year. Defense is just flukier because it's so dependent on turnovers. Whereas if you have just Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, you're just going to have a good offense every single year. And the Bears, who had an awesome defense in the second half of the season, a lot of that was built off of turnovers. They led the league in interceptions, which is very fluky, and that's unlikely to be repeated. And then just look at the names on the defense. Like, yeah, Jalen Johnson, he's a monster. He's amazing. But on the defensive line, like, people talked about Montez Sweat arriving as though the Bears had added Myles Garrett. Like, Montez Sweat's very good, but he's not an all-world defensive end. I think the team still has some issues in terms of just star power on the defense. Look, I don't think it's going to be a bad defense, but I think that some people are expecting this is going to be like a top five, six unit. I'm not there. What they do have in their favor is that the schedule is relatively easy, and I think the offense is clearly going to be better. I think there's a very good chance the Bears actually have a better offense than they do defense. We also need to see Matt Eberflus prove it in the NFL. I don't think the early returns have been fantastic on him as a head coach. So, look, right now the Bears are around pick to make the playoffs. I would be on the no side of that. Even though they have an easy-ish schedule, they're still in a tough division. I think the Packers and Lions right now are still clearly in front of them.
Yeah, you can make a case that Vikings roster is really good. They just got to figure out the quarterback situation. But, hey, if Kevin Stefanski can get that playoff to get the Browns into the playoffs with Joe Flacco, who knows? Maybe Kevin O'Connell can get the Vikings into the playoffs with the Sam Darnold, J.J. McCarthy consortium there. Let's stay in that division for a minute, because I do think the top of it, I mean, goodness gracious, Green Bay just surprised everyone, especially the back half of last year. And you want to talk about culture in the NFL. Is there a culture right now in the league better than what the Lions have brewing with Dan Campbell out there in the Motor City? I mean, that is a really uphill battle for a rookie quarterback, two very established cultures in front of them in that NFC North.
Absolutely. And look, the Lions, they're just rock solid, and the roster is excellent. The offensive line is perhaps the best in the NFL. The question mark is always Jared Goff, but I think he's kind of proven the past couple of years that he is just a solid above average quarterback. I thought that he was impressive in the NFC title game against San Francisco, even though they lost that. The issue with the Lions is just that they are going to be so dependent on Amon-Ra St. Brown. And if he misses any time, then all of a sudden you're asking for someone like Jameson Williams to really step up. And he's got the talent, but he's never really done it before. So look, I think the Lions, they should be a regular season wins machine. And then the Packers, who you mentioned, I think it's not gone under the radar necessarily, but hasn't been perhaps focused on that. In the back half of the season, Jordan Love was close to the best quarterback in football statistically. They were an absolute monster. We all remember how they decimated the Cowboys. So, look, I think there is a very good chance that the Packers, if they can just get a bit healthier, because they did it last year with a lot of injuries at receiver, on defense. I think that team has the upside to be the one seed in the NFC.
Jay Croucher, NBC Sports lead betting analyst. Also catch him on the Fantasy Football Happy Hour and, of course, the Bet the Edge podcast. Follow him on X at CroucherJD. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Jay Croucher, there he goes. Great stuff. Loving the Mets. Lindor, maybe I'm a little bit lower on Mr. Francisco than others. Maybe I need to get higher. We'll close up Sharp Money on the other side here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
July is ending with a bang. UFC 304, not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of USC. Download the app now. Use code VSiN. That's code VSiN for new customers. Get $150 in bonus bets when you deposit just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. What an awesome show today. Our producer, Dustin Sweetelson, booked Eric Lindquist, Ted Wynn, Matt Sims, Scott Grayson, Jay Croucher. It just a star-studded lineup Everyone in the back also did a great job. This has been an awesome 3 days filling in for Patrick. You get Ben Wilson tomorrow. You get Joe Cirillo all of next week, and then Patrick will be back next Friday. Let's wrap things up today with my favorite team. We haven't talked about the Jets today, which is a sin. We should talk about them every day because they're the best team in the NFL. No, I'm just kidding. But they are perhaps the most intriguing team in the NFL when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers at the helm. He made some statements today about his departure from the mandatory minicamp.
Well, no, actually, what he said here, I'm okey-doking you. I mentioned that quote earlier.
Oh.
We're going to do an exercise based on what Aaron Rodgers is about to say. And he went and talked to the media about the New York Jets Super Bowl hopes.
Oh.
It has to be the goal. I mean, the beauty is every single year there's 8 to 12 teams, maybe, probably less, but 8 to 12 teams that could actually do it, and we're one of those 8 to 12.
Okay, this is what I want to do off of
that. I agree.
He says 8 to 12. Off the top of your head, give me the number. I'll give you the number, what I think. I have not thought about this at all. How many teams do you think we have to consensus agree can win the Super Bowl? Consensus. So if one does and one doesn't count.
Six.
Well, I was going to say seven. He says 8 to 12, so we're on the under.
Yeah.
Right? So let's go Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
We both agree. The 49ers.
No.
Oh, wow. I was – you're wild.
I don't think they can win the Super Bowl this year. Their offensive line stinks. It's terrible. It's going to be absolutely ripped to shreds by good defensive lines this year.
I love you, and I love you for doing this, but I disagree.
That's fine.
I love that that's your take, though.
I'm okay with being on an island. Here's the thing. We have so much groupthink in the NFL. We have months to think about these teams. I see things that are red flags for me in prior years, and I just move that team to the other side. The Niners did not address their offensive line in the offseason. Now Trent Williams is having his problems. I do not consider them to be a lot, like, if I close my eyes and I look at think about the best teams in the NFC, they are on the same level as Philly and Detroit, and I think Philly might be a little better.
Okay.
I do.
Aaron Rodgers says 8 to 12 teams can win the Super Bowl. Jared thinks 6.
Well, I think they can win, but I'm not high on them. Just put them on the no list for me. They're on the no list.
All right, we disagree. They can't be on the list. All right, the Baltimore Ravens are 10-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Yes, they're on the list.
I agree. And I think they are locked and loaded back with a vengeance.
Yes.
And we have to give teams credit who can learn, right? At some point, I do think they learn and they address the issues which pop up in the postseason a little bit differently this year. So we have two now. Aaron Rodgers says 8 to 12 teams can win the Super Bowl. Can the Detroit Lions at 12-1 win the Super Bowl?
Absolutely. 100%. They check every stinking box with the exception of maybe not an athletic enough quarterback. Every other box, the system, the scheme, the culture, the roster. They check every and their schedule. Look at how many outdoor games Jared Goff plays this year. That means they're probably going to be on the inside track for the one seed, which means he will not have to go to San Francisco for that game outdoor. So I think the Lions, to me, are a better Super Bowl contender this year than the Niners.
No, everything sets up perfect for Detroit. There's nothing really to hate about where they're at. And the roster is getting better, more cohesion. They addressed major needs in the secondary in the offseason, making a trade, drafting a corner. I like what they did there. Agree. All right, your next team is Cincinnati Bengals, a 13-1. Can they win the Super Bowl?
If Joe Burrow's healthy, yes.
See, this is a tough one. I'm going to say yes, but it's annoying because it all rides on Joe Burrow's health. And yes, the health of everyone's quarterback dictates whether they can win a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow has just not
more
been available.
Hurt. Yeah, he's been more hurt
as much as other quarterbacks. Great new haircut, though. All right, the Philadelphia Eagles, yes, we both
100%.
Agree. Everyone, I'm getting so many messages, so many DMs from people. You two need to stop with the Philadelphia Eagles. We're annoying everyone. So we'll move on. Can the Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl?
No.
I agree. They can't. Jay made a great point, Croucher, a moment ago on the show.
I agree. Yeah. They're, you should be higher on them relative to market.
But people are acting like they just lost Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is like a drop in the bucket. They lost Mitch Morse. They lost their entire secondary. Like, what are we doing here? This is a team we don't know who their go-to weapon's going to be on third down. Maybe it's Dalton Kincaid, an in-between tight end wide receiver combo. I'm not buying the Bills. So, no, they cannot win the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers says 8 to 12. Right now, we say 5 so far, bringing us to the Houston Texans at 16-1.
No, not yet.
Really? I was going to say yes reluctantly.
I'm not there yet. I'll be honest. I think my list is done right now.
Oh, stop. The Green Bay Packers.
No.
See, I'm down on the Packers, but I would have said yes.
I don't think they can win a Super Bowl. See, here's the thing. I think the list of elite teams is very small in the NFL. And we're going to pump these teams up. The teams are always pumped up higher than they really are. There's always more positive than negative usually with these teams heading into the regular season. I think when we get to the end of the rainbow, I honestly think there's really four teams. I think there's four elite teams in this league right now, and I think the other ones I'm very undecided on. I love Jared Goff, but I don't know if they can win a Super Bowl this year.
Sounds like a song. I love love.
I love love. I don't know if they can win a Super Bowl this year. I think to win a Super Bowl, you need to go through the rigors. You need to get to the top of the mountain and fall short. You need to know what that feels like. The Lions have been there. The Lions got to the edge of the precipice last year. The Eagles got to the edge. The Niners have too, but I think the Niners' roster is worse than those other two teams. I don't think they're as deep. And in the trenches, they're definitely not as deep as the Eagles and the Lions. I think the toughest teams in the NFC are the Eagles and the Lions. I think the toughest teams in the AFC are the Ravens and the Chiefs. Outside of those four, I don't know if I trust anyone else in a big game to win the Super Bowl.
Well, let me say this, though. I do think we're in a bit of a new era when it comes to the NFL post-Tom Brady, where it is way more wide open than we're normally used
to. That I agree with.
Now, Patrick Mahomes exists, and I understand
that. Great equalizer.
However, I do think it is more wide open at this moment. There are more teams going for it who believe they can win right now this year than we normally have. I'm going to continue the exercise. Maybe I can convince you here.
You can't convince me on one more.
Not this team, though. The Dallas Cowboys at 19-1. That's a dumpster fire.
The Jets, you can convince me on, because at their peak with Rodgers, they have every single box checked.
Well, we're at...
They do.
We're at six, then. We're at six.
That's it.
The Dolphins?
No, no, no.
The Rams?
No.
The Falcons?
No.
The Bears?
No. Stop.
This is the only realistic one I'll throw. I do think the Browns can.
I know. You're really high on the Browns. I think Deshaun Watson's a bottom 10 quarterback.
So it turns out... Jared thinks like four teams can win the Super Bowl, and I think 20. And that sums up our relationship.
Well, it's not that the other teams can't win. I just have a line. I draw a line. Kansas City, Baltimore, and the AFC. And the AFC is a lot tougher to predict, let's be honest. Buffalo, Cincinnati, the Jets, they could easily have the best record in the AFC if all of the pieces fall into place for them. But push comes to shove. Playoff game, everything on the line. I'll take Mahomes, obviously. And I think this Ravens team learned a lot from that experience last year. And that's why I give them a little bit of a boost. That's why I give the Lions a little bit of a boost, because they got to the top of the mountain where they almost touched the money. And then they fell short in the final moments against the Niners. I thought they were good enough to win that game. And I think San Francisco takes a step back. I think Philly ascends to that perch. I have a very definitive top four. I have two teams in each conference that I think are the two top teams that are going to be competing in the NFC and AFC championship game. San Francisco, of course, is there. Green Bay is there. I wouldn't be shocked if an upset happened. Green Bay got into the NFC title game. That would not shock me. But I think Philly and Detroit, because of the culture and the trenches, are just a hair in front of San Francisco right now, is dealing with a lot of drama. Maybe that drama subsides. Maybe they figure things out in the trenches. Maybe week 8, week 9, week 10, I change my tune. I have every right to do that, by the way. But right now, heading into the season, I'm putting San Francisco outside of that circle. And I think Detroit and Philly are in.
All right, well, then play this game for me. You have your list of who you think is going to be there. Give me the matchup, and I'll give you the odds of that matchup happening. And give me what you think the result will be.
Eagles over Chiefs.
Eagles over Chiefs. Let's find it. Thought this was going to be easier to sort through. We don't have a lot of time.
You do. You got plenty of time. You got nothing.
Oh, no, I had
time,
that right away. Eagles versus Chiefs is 30-1.
That's just the matchup, but not Eagles over Chiefs.
And then Eagles over Chiefs would be Eagles to beat Philly. This is great radio. Eagles to beat the Chiefs. It's the highest one. 65-1.
It's a good bet. It's not a good bet. It's a terrible bet. Honestly, but it's a fun bet.
You could also bet Chiefs to beat the Eagles 65-1. Bet both of them
right now.
It's
a terrible bet, because you're better off just picking individual conference winners and letting those bets play out.
But you just said four teams can win it.
I know, but I don't even know what the field looks like. What if the Ravens and the Chiefs play each other in the divisional round? Well, then I'm not as excited about the situation. Here's the point that I'm trying to make at the end. I consider there's a final four in my mind. I think those four teams are the best four in the NFL right now heading into the season. Things could change.
And what I say is live a little. Find a long shot. Let it ride.
Well, the long shot might come down in price, but win equity Is anyone outside of those top three or four quarterbacks in the AFC really going to make the Super Bowl? No, it's not going to happen. This guy's in the Super Bowl every day. Dustin Sweetelson, he's been awesome helping me get through the week. More Sharp Money tomorrow with Ben Wilson. Coming up next, JBT and Tim Murray, VSiN Primetime. Stay with us.